The newspaper, The Evening Standard, once conducted an experiment. They got a man to stand outside Oxford Circus Station in central London, handing out leaflets. On the leaflet was the offer of a £5 note for just bringing the leaflet back to the man handing the leaflets out. Now, that's probably one of the busiest places in England. Crowds of people would have passed the man. Crowds of people would have received one of these leaflets. By the end of 3 hours, just 11 people had come to claim their £5 note. Most people had probably not even taken the leaflet as he offered it. Probably a lot of those who had taken the leaflet hadn't bothered to read it. But still, there must have been plenty of people who read it, thought it couldn't be as good as it seemed, must be a spoof, and just ignored it. But all of those people missed out on their free £5 note. I said earlier, we're continuing our series, Amazing Grace, looking at the way right through the Old Testament we can see God treating people with grace. We see God giving people what they don't deserve and what they cannot possibly earn. But like that experiment at Oxford Circus, although God was offering this grace, people still had to respond to it. And responding to God's grace is a whole lot more significant than getting a £5 note. And we're going to be looking at another passage tonight, which helps us to see something about that. So let's turn now to the Bible. Anne's going to come and read for us.
Proverbs 21, starting to read at verse 9, and it's on page 158 of the Pew Bibles. The bronze snake. They travelled from Mount Hor along the route to the Red Sea to go round Edom. But the people grew impatient on the way. They spoke against God and against Moses and said, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There is no bread, there is no water, and we detest this miserable food." Then the Lord sent venomous snakes among them. They bit the people, and many Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, "We sinned when we spoke against the Lord and against you. Pray that the Lord will take the snakes away from us." So Moses prayed for the people. The Lord said to Moses, "Make a snake and put it up on a pole. Anyone who is bitten can look at it and live." So Moses made a bronze snake and put it up on a pole. Then when anyone was bitten by a snake and looked at the bronze snake, they lived. This is the word of the Lord.
What a strange event. It just seems so far from our modern world, doesn't it? What's going on? God sending snakes just because his people were moaning. Is that really what we expect of God? And then this bronze snake. Anyone who looks at it will live. How does that work? Writing to the Romans, Paul said, "Everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through the endurance taught by the scriptures and the encouragement they provide, we might have hope." But what are we supposed to be getting out of this? How is this supposed to encourage us? Well, as we have a look at it, we're going to need to look at quite a bit else to try to make sense of this, I think. But first, there was this reaction from God. So there, verse 5, they spoke against God and against Moses and said, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There's no bread, there's no water, and we detest this miserable food." Then the Lord sent venomous snakes among them. They bit the people and many Israelites died. Does seem a bit of an overreaction, doesn't it? Yeah, really? But of course, it wasn't the first time that God's people had been doing that. We saw last week that God rescued his people from Egypt. Like the Egyptians, God's people were under God's judgment. They'd sinned just as much as the Egyptians had, but in his grace, God provided a way out from that judgment. The children of Israel were freed, and they set off. And they reached the edge of the sea. Let me read from Exodus 14. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." You kind of get the impression that gratitude wasn't one of the children of Israel's strong suits, really. They'd seen God do amazing things in Egypt, but they didn't believe that he could rescue them now. They still didn't trust him. But of course, God did complete his rescue of them. He opened a path through the sea for them to walk through. About 6 weeks later, Exodus 16, the whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they'd come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we died in Egypt. There we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you've brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death."
6 weeks.
6 weeks before this, they had seen God open a path through the water so that they could be safe. And now they're moaning. God responded by giving them manna to eat every day. And just a few days later, the whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there. They grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" God once again gave them what they needed. Another few days later, just 2 months after they'd left Egypt, they came to Sinai. The people committed themselves to obey the Lord. Moses went up the mountain to receive the law. And when he came down, they'd made a golden calf to worship. This was just a repeated pattern. A year passed. They'd almost reached the land God had promised them as their home. They sent spies to check the land over. The spies came back and told them there were giants there. And the people immediately decided that in that case, they couldn't possibly conquer the land. With all that memory, that just a year earlier, God had performed amazing miracles in Egypt and had opened a path through the sea for them to be safe, they still didn't trust him to give them the land. And so the children of Israel ended up wandering in the desert for almost 40 years. And as they wandered, they grumbled. Eventually, the whole generation who'd seen what God had done in rescuing his people, but had still rebelled against him, was dead. And then came the first hint of an end to the wandering. At the start of Numbers 21, there was a great battle against the Canaanites. The Israelites prayed for God's help, and he gave it. The battle was won. But once again, despite having seen God help them in that dramatic way, guess what? They began to grumble. And that brings us back to our reading. But the people grew impatient on the way. They spoke against God and against Moses and said, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There's no bread, there's no water, and we detest this miserable food." Quite frankly, if I was God, Those snakes would have appeared an awful lot sooner. And they would probably have been very big and vicious snakes. But of course, that's the thing. I'm not God. We know that God is gracious and compassionate, that he's slow to anger, that he's rich in mercy. Okay, so the people have been moaning a lot, but here God seems to have punished them in this quite severe way just because they've been moaning about him. It's not what we expect. But there was more to it than just that. If you were here last week, you'll remember that when God set his people free from Egypt, it wasn't so that they could just go off and do whatever they wanted. That kind of myth of human autonomy, which is such a pernicious lie. God set them free from slavery in Egypt so that they could be his people. And just before Moses went up Sinai to get the law, God repeated that. In Exodus 19. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." They were to be God's people, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And what that meant was that the whole earth is the Lord's, but by being a kingdom of priests, Israel would have the great privilege and responsibility of revealing God to the rest of the world, so that the other nations could also come and worship him. God didn't choose Israel for their own benefit. He chose Israel in order to bless the world through them. So you see, when Israel consistently rebelled against God, when they moaned about him, when they refused to trust him, they were failing that great calling. And so God had to punish them, not just because of their sin, but because he had to bring them back to their senses so they could be a people who would reveal his glory to the world and through whom he could bless the world. You see, sin has this tendency to spill over. You do something wrong, and almost inevitably, somebody else gets hurt because of it. And that's why God has to punish sin, because he's a God of justice and righteousness. And if I'm doing something that is causing hurt to somebody else, that needs to be punished. Or else God would be immoral, really. And so because Israel had failed to put their trust in the Lord, they just wouldn't trust him. They wouldn't be the people he'd called them to be, even though they actually committed themselves to doing it. He sent the snakes. So why snakes? Lions would have been quite effective. Bears could have sorted things out quite nicely. Why snakes? I'm not absolutely sure, but I think it might go back to the Garden of Eden. In the Garden of Eden, it was a snake which tempted Eve to reject what God had said, to not trust God. And right through the Bible, the snake or serpent symbolizes that opposition to God, that refusal to trust God, that refusal to allow God to be God. So Revelation 12 talks about that ancient snake called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. And so for these people who knew the account of creation and fall, these snakes would remind them of rebellion against God and the punishment that brings. Because sin, rebellion against God, does bring punishment. And it isn't because God is spiteful or bad-tempered. but because he is righteous. So here in Numbers 21, as yet again God's people rebel against him, refuse to acknowledge him as God, deny their God-given calling to be a blessing to the world by revealing God to the world, judgment's inevitable. The Lord sent poisonous snakes among them, and they bit the people, and many Israelites died. Of course, if we're realistic, all of the Israelites deserved to die. But God, who is love, didn't want that. Finally, the people asked Moses to pray that God would take away the snakes. But in replying to their prayer, God doesn't just take them away. He told Moses to make a bronze snake and put it on a pole. God told Moses to tell the people that anyone who was bitten by a snake just had to look at the bronze snake and he or she would live. God, in his amazing grace, provided a way of being saved from certain death. But it still necessitated a response. It was dead straightforward, but it wasn't automatic. People who'd been bitten had to recognize that they'd got a problem. They had to trust that looking at the snake could deal with that problem. And then they had to look. But why did God do it that way? It's because what happened here pointed forwards to an even more amazing act of grace. In John 3:14, Jesus tells Nicodemus, "Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the desert, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes in him may have eternal life." The snake on a pole was pointing forwards to the time when Jesus, the Son of God, would hang on a cross. The time when he who knew no sin became sin for us. Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the desert, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes in him may have eternal life. You see, sin is as deadly as those snakes. Sin bites us, and it kills us. And we can't actually fix the problem. We need God to fix the problem for us. But we have no right to expect that he'll do it. We have to rely on his grace. We need to recognize that we have a problem. A problem just as poisonous as snake venom. But on the cross, Jesus died to take the poison of that sin into his own body. He became sin for us. It's a kind of shocking thing, but that snake on a pole does point us towards Jesus. The snake represented the very thing that was killing the people. On the cross, Jesus became sin, the very thing that's killing us. All that I have to do is look at him, to trust that he's able to deal with my sin, that on the cross he dealt with that sin once and for all, and on the basis of that, turn from my rebellion and ask him to forgive me. I've kind of pondered sometimes about how people responded when Moses put that bronze snake on a pole. I wonder how many of the Israelites there were who said, "Oh, it's only a little bite. The poison isn't that bad. I'll be okay." I wonder if some of them said, "I've been a part of this people all my life. I don't need any of this bronze snake stuff." I wonder if some of them said, "That's just silly. How could a bronze snake on a pole affect the poison running in my veins? It doesn't make any sense at all." I wonder how many died after Moses had made the bronze snake because they didn't do the one thing they had to do. Look at it. And of course, they're all the responses that you will find today to Jesus. But it wasn't enough just to accept that the snake was able to make you well and then do nothing about it. God, in his amazing grace, made this way for people to be saved. But they had to do something. They actually had to look. And that's how it is with Jesus. In the Bible, believing never just means some sort of academic acceptance of a statement as true. To believe involves a personal commitment. To believe in someone involves a relationship with them. So how does it actually connect with us? Well, I think it's a reminder for us that actually, just as God had called his Old Testament people to reveal his glory to the world, that's what he's called us to do now. Our job is to live in such a way that other people will see and want to know our God, because what he's done for us is so good. And it's a reminder that actually failing to do that, not living up to that calling, not trusting God and allowing him to do that through us, is a sin. But we don't have to worry about punishment for that sin. God's not going to send a plague of snakes to Morton or anywhere else, actually, because that punishment has already been paid. Maybe this is where this passage is important for us. You see, I can no more explain how Jesus' death 2,000 years ago can bring me forgiveness and eternal life than I can explain how looking at a bronze snake could cure people who'd been bitten by a poisonous snake. But I don't actually need to be able to explain it. I just need to trust it. And I think that's where this strange passage from Numbers does give encouragement to me now. How can I be sure? How can you be sure that Jesus' death really has dealt with my sin? How can I be sure that I have eternal life? Because I can look back centuries before Jesus' death and see that then, when anyone was bitten by a snake and looked at the bronze snake, they lived. Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the desert, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, so that everyone who believes in him may have eternal life.